This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
I'm joined today by Lewis Malingas from Dominant Strands, and we talk all things custom strings. We talk about the benefit of custom strings. We talk about how to know when you need them, how to know what kind of build you should go with. We talk about releases, how to learn releases, how to know which kind of release you should shoot. It's a good conversation. We hear some stories of some giant deer hitting the ground too, and some fun stories about his brother. His brother running into some wounded deer. It's a fun episode. It's a good episode. It's an informative episode. Guys, I hope you enjoy it. As always, this episode is brought to you and presented by our good friends over at ScentLock.
Welcome to Bear Archery's Hunting 101 podcast, where hunters new and old come to learn and find inspiration from stories of hunts gone by. Everyone is welcome to enjoy the outdoor way of life, and there is no better time to start than right now. So let's head into the great outdoors with your host, Dylan Ray.
Guys, I'm an arrow junkie. I love arrows. And I have found a fondness for deer crossing archery. Everybody makes a good arrow. I'm not saying that anybody out there makes a bad arrow. But what really sets deer crossing archery apart is when I call them, I'm going to get the owner on the phone. I'm going to get the guy that's building my arrows on the phone, and they're going to walk me through a complete custom build. They're not shipping me a box of arrows that they ship out to everybody. I'm going to pick my knot colors, my fletching colors, my wrap colors, the fletching configuration I want on the arrows. Not only that, I'm going to walk him through my setup. I'm going to walk him through what I'm looking to get out of the setup. I'm going to tell him total arrow length I want to be hitting, total arrow weight I want to be hitting, total insert-outsert weight I want to be hitting, FOC. And he's going to custom build a set of arrows and send them to me. My arrows aren't going to be best for you. Your arrows aren't going to be best for me. We need custom arrows. Deer Crossing Archery builds those arrows custom for you, and they always perform. Their silencer shaft is my favorite arrow on planet Earth. I've shot 40-plus animals with that arrow. It always performs. It always blows through the animal. I always get great penetration. It's a micro-diameter shaft. They do have a full line of shafts. The new Rupture arrow is a phenomenal arrow. I shot a deer with it this year in Missouri. I love their arrows. Guys, I would highly encourage you to check out Deer Crossing Archery, because you don't have to go to a box store and buy a set of arrows that are just made from the factory. You can get arrows custom made for you that are going to work best for you and your setup. Guys, use code HUNTING101 to get a discount at Deer Crossing Archery. I would highly encourage you to check them out. They are phenomenal. Did you guys get hit with the snowstorm?
We did. We got a couple inches on the ground.
How'd that, what'd that do for your deer?
Well, actually, I haven't had the ability to go the last day or two while the snow's on the ground yet. And then somebody wanted to chat, so that's probably ruining this afternoon.
No, we'll be done. You can get done, go hunt.
I got strings to build.
Well, that's your fault, not mine.
Well, you know.
Don't be so busy.
Well, because I'm busy.
Lewis.
What's going on?
How's life, man?
Life has been pretty good, actually, the last few weeks. So,
yeah,
starting to slow down a little bit. It's that time of year where everybody's starting to get hunting, so I don't have quite so much work to do. But
yeah, that's how it goes, man. People think like, oh, you get to work in the hunting industry, all you get to do is hunt. Like,
Wrong.
No, unfortunately, that's usually when I have to work more because everybody else wants to go hunting.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. While everybody else wants to go hunt, I get to work. So
yeah,
that's unfortunately it.
Now, for those who don't know you, give us an introduction to yourself, man. Dominant Strands, kind of how you got started, kind of how you got to where you're at.
Well, I got lucky enough to grow up in the heart of whitetail country and grow up kind of in the industry, around the industry. I was lucky enough to grow up around a family that was involved in the industry. My grandpa grew, was around here selling and doing archery stuff out of his basement house, and him and my grandma shot and competed in tournaments around the area, and shot with the likes of Pete Shepley and those guys when they were here in Illinois. And then my dad and his friend started a shop and had a shop here locally when I was a kid. And then I grew up around them and tinkering in their shop and learning the trade. And then my dad got to be really good friends with a gentleman who was one of the first employees that PSE had, by the name of George Chapman. And that led to him being one of the co-owners of that gentleman's business, which is the Chapman Archery School. And when George passed away, him and Steve Van Zyl, my dad and Monty, run that school. And Steve still actively teaches that school to this day. And so through all of that, I was lucky enough to shoot and be around the industry growing up as a kid, and learn the ins and outs and get told, stay out of the industry or you won't be able to hunt. And yeah, so I kept coming back to it. I went off to the military and spent 12 years working and doing that. And then I medically retired and came home and worked around the family farm and helped other local farmers. And I kept finding myself back in and around the industry. And sure enough, here we go. And in a conversation with some friends and whatnot, led to me being back here building bowstrings, tinkering in a shop. And I said, man, I must be crazy. They said, well, you're not crazy. This is just what you do. It's in your DNA. It's in your blood. And Dominant Strands was born through part of that and in conjunction with some other friends and through other bits and pieces, trials and tribulations, it wound up being me and another couple friends, and I bought them out, and now it's just me. And then I've got some guys that help and work in the shop with me, and I'm the sole owner, but here we are. And we now have Dominant Strands custom bowstrings, and hashtag it's in your DNA. So this is where I'm at.
Yeah. Yeah, man. And we have, you know, I've been wanting to have you on for quite some time. We just have so much shared love. You know, we have a built love around bear and around custom bowstrings and around deer crossing archery and hot shot releases. You know, there's just all these things that we're, you know, these things that I love, you also have a love for. And so been wanting to have you on for a long time. And, so I'm glad we're finally knocking that out. So, one thing I do want to dive into is just kind of the, not misconception, the misunderstanding that once you get a bow, you're ready to shoot. Now, I will say this, custom strings are one of those things that I will always be a proponent of. I pretty much always, the moment I get a bow, put new strings on it. However, I also want to go down as being quoted, you know, if you listen to last week's episode, then we talked largely about how there's a lot of things you don't have to go hunting. You don't have to have new strings to go hunting. Your bow is going to perform and work just fine with the strings that come on it. However, by upgrading your strings, it's something that you can do to increase, and I don't know a percentage, but to increase the performance of your bow by a substantial amount without a large investment, especially with stick bows. I mean, the moment you get a stick bow, we're talking $25, $30 for the best string you can buy. Why wouldn't you do that? You know, your bow is going to perform way better. Right. It's going to be quieter. It's going to be faster. String's going to last longer. It won't stretch. Why wouldn't you do that? You're going to increase the performance of that bow substantially by a super small investment. So what are your, why do you tell people yay or nay on new strings?
Well, the truth of the matter is that, you know, you are correct. The strings that are on your bow from the factory, more often than not, are going to do you just fine. You can go hunting with them and you will be perfectly capable of going out and killing the animals you're after. However, you can get better performance more a lot of the times.
Consistent performance.
Consistent performance, exactly. Because many times in a lot of factory settings, and I got to preface this because I am a staff shooter for Bear. I've shot for other companies as well. Many times in a factory setting, those strings are getting made in such a mass quantity that you lose some of that precision in the fact that they're not looking for that finite detail, that exact what your specification is. So a custom builder can do that one little thing that can make that string, especially with a stick bow, like you're talking about. I can take and do that one thing with your stick bow that can make it work for you. Like let's take my dad, for instance. My dad found in the 90s, especially when they started to change from that 60-70% let off world into some of these really high let off bows. And he shot a hinge style release that all of a sudden he started throwing the release and he was just launching it. And we actually witnessed him throw it across the shop and we're like, what is going on with him? And couldn't figure it out. And ended up, what we figured out was that the high percentage let off bow that he had just jumped to, that 75-80% let off, was actually what caused the problem. And that change in let off affected his shot. And because of that, his hand and the relaxed way he shot, he didn't have enough back tension and his release, and it was actually causing him to throw the release. And it was messing with his shot. He didn't have the back tension that he needed in the way he felt the bow. And so when we changed his holding weight by adding pounds to the front end of the bow, then he actually was fine. Well, he didn't really want to draw an extra 4 pounds to get that. Well, back then we didn't really have a way to change that. Today we do. I can actually change his holding weight without changing his draw weight by changing the way I build his strings. So I can change his strings enough that by changing his cables a couple strands or changing the diameter of his cable with the dimension that I build his strands in the diameter that I use at serving, I can actually change his holding weight a little bit. And by doing that, I change his percentage in the way it rests in the track. And when I do that, it doesn't sit in the valley the same. And it's an engineering thing. And when I do that, it changes the way that cam rolls. That changes the valley. That changes the holding weight. And he's not actually holding 80%. He's holding, say, 78% let off. And that changes his holding weight. So a good custom builder, a true custom builder that knows what they're doing, they can actually do things like that for you. And that's the difference between a custom string and a factory built string is going to be built to the factory spec, the engineering spec from the factory. Now, most people aren't looking for that. And in that regard, just a general average custom string, then you're looking at just standard overall performance, things like peep rotation and stuff like that. And a lot of that goes down to just the quality, the precision of the build, the fact that it's going through one set of hands, being pre-stressed and cycled, pre-stretched. You'll hear a lot of those different terms depending on the builder. Different builders use different terms, but it all pretty much means the same kind of thing. They're doing things to take some of that initial creep out of the materials so that when it goes on your bow, it's set and you don't have that break-in period that you see. But that actually causes a causes the bow, those things, little things that we do when we build the string, causes that string to be more consistent overall through the life of the string. And those attention to those minor details, a lot of times in a factory setting, just they don't have that. It's nothing against the factories. It's just the way that they're building to that mass quantity. And just a lot of times that stuff gets overlooked or it doesn't happen on the same level that a custom builder can do.
So that brings up an interesting question for me. On bows that have adjustable let-off, let's say they persist, would you build strings differently if you know a guy's going to be shooting it at 90 versus 70 or 85? Do you build the string different at all?
Yes and no. Not so much that I build it differently, but I may tell that person different things about, hey, this is how this string is going to react to what you're doing. Partially because, you know, at 90% let off, there's so little tension on the string at full draw that string is going to react differently in how that peep is going to sit than when you have it at 75% let off. No matter how that string is built, no matter who builds it, at 90% let off, there is so little tension in that string that every little thing that you do as a person with your hand, your release and stuff is going to affect that peep and the rotation that it might or might not show. So little things that you do are going to show way more than at 75% because there's so much more tension in the string. So I'm going to knowingly treat that person a little different as far as when they call and say, hey, I'm having this issue or I'm having that issue. Knowing that you have 90% let off on your bow is going to lead me down the road a little different as far as how I'm going to approach an issue that you may or may not have with that bow.
So will based off everything you just said, for the guy who just bought the new bow and they're setting it up, you know, maybe it's a Persist, maybe it's a Whitetail Max, whatever it might be. What do you encourage them? I mean, obviously it comes down to personal preference, but is a bow going to perform better at any specific let off?
I don't know that I would say it will perform specifically better. A lot of times that has to do with the shooter. Me personally, I don't prefer the high let off, and that's because coming more from a target world as a kid, I like that holding weight, kind of like my dad, the story of telling about him, that holding weight for me is a thing. It's just like a bull barrel on a rifle shoot for guys that shoot long distance rifle shooting. Having that holding weight actually makes you a steadier shot, gives your body something to fight against, that muscle. Rather than when you have nothing there to pull against or to draw against, you actually are not as steady. So personally, I prefer to have a little more holding weight. I'm going to be more steady, but that's more of a personal thing than anything for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think, you know, once these let-offs started going higher up, it takes some real getting used to, because that first time you shoot 80, much less 90%, It doesn't feel natural at all. And it's because, you know, for me, what I've learned is with those super high let-offs, I find myself just relaxing too much in the shot and not pulling through my shot, much like you just talked about. You know, I don't just pull through my shot real clean. I just kind of relax too much and I get more lax in my shooting. But again, that's something that, you know, once you get used to and once you learn that, you pull through the back wall anyways. So if you're going to pull through the back wall, does it really matter if it's 90 versus 75? You know what I mean?
No,
because you're going to be pulling through the back wall either way. Now, the difference is, and where this really plays a difference is, you know, if you're going on an elk hunt or something and you might have to hold it full draw for 2 minutes, you know, a minute and 30 seconds, minute and 40 seconds because of the way the elk's coming in or for whatever reason, you know, then you can get more relaxed in your shot without having to let it down. But then you have to make the conscious choice of like, okay, now I have to start pulling through my back wall again. I've been relaxed just holding it here, but now I have to really pull through the back wall and execute a shot well. And there just has to be that learning. You know, there has to be that messing with your equipment. And that's why, you know, this was kind of a topic of discussion last week. There is no substitute for just learning your equipment. There's no substitute for just spending time with that bow, spending time with how that bow likes to be shot and learning what that bow likes. There's no substitute for that. Do you prefer or change anything on let off if you're shooting or if somebody's shooting a index release, a thumb release, hinge release? Does any of that kind of play into a setup of a bow and where you might like that let off?
Yes and no. If the for me, that goes back kind of to the personal preference thing. Me personally, yes, with my hinge release, I want more holding weight because I need that pull through. But yeah, when I go to hunt, I don't need near as much. I can drop that to, you know, I can go shoot that 80, 85, and I know that I got to pull back through it and I can relax a little bit. If I got to hold that weight for a little longer, if that deer, elk, whatever, you know, hesitates for a second before it steps on out, you know, when I draw behind a tree or something like that, I can hold it a little longer. But like you said, it takes time to learn not only the bow, but it also, you need to learn what makes you comfortable. You know, are you comfortable holding that for that length of time? Shoot it yourself and find what fits best for you and the bow both. You know, if you're not comfortable with it, then that's not okay either. So,
yeah, no, absolutely. And that's why, you know, again, there's just no substitute for it. And that was, you know, largely part of last week's topic of discussion was everybody wants to upgrade. Everybody wants to try new and better and bigger, more fancy equipment. Yep. But there's no substitute for just getting a bow or a release or a sight and just learning everything there is to know about that piece of equipment. You know, and if you have a sight or a bow that's 5 years older, but you can shoot that bow really well because you know that bow, don't change it. Guys, I oftentimes say that I always have a binocular harness on my chest. What good is a binocular harness without a good set of binoculars? I am a sucker for fine Japanese glass. I love good optics. I love spending time behind it. It's just fun. It's fun to go out and look at stuff. But also, good optics make spotting and looking through them a whole lot more enjoyable. Koa Optics does it and does it better than anyone else, in my opinion. They have some of the finest Japanese glass on planet Earth. It's all I've used for the past, I don't know, 8 years or so. This right here, the Koa 55, is one of the best products ever made in the history of the universe. It is the smallest, most compact scope you can get, but it still offers phenomenal glass. It's really hard to find a spotter that is this small, this light, this compact. You can throw it in your backpack. You can leave it in your truck. It's so small and so compact, but it still offers phenomenal glass. This is one of my favorite products ever. Guys, if you're in the market for new optics, I would highly encourage you to check out Koa Optics because they are, in my opinion, the best glass that you can buy. Go check them out. I want to jump into a little bit because I asked you about releases and how that changes let off.
Mm-hmm.
What do you tell people, If somebody were to just call you and say, hey, what kind of release, not brand wise, but what kind of release should I start learning to shoot? Index, thumb, hinge. Maybe I've been an index shooter and I'm ready to try something new. How do you wade through all those waters, man? Like, there's a lot there to unpack. But like,
yeah.
Give the listener some advice on releases and how to choose one, how to find one, how to know what works well, what doesn't.
And that's a deep, dark cave of, I don't even know where to begin with that one. I mean, you can always do the tried and true. I mean, index releases have been around for forever, but then again, thumb buttons have too. And, you know, hinges and, there's a lot of different brands and a lot of different types. And you just got to kind of try and find a little bit of what works for you. And there's different theories and different ways to shoot different ones. You know, some guys like to shoot their thumb button as a trigger kind of, you know, they push the button. Some guys shoot it more like a back tension hinge style, you know, where they get it anchored in and then, you know, kind of rock their hand into it. And, you know, you just got to try a little bit of everything, but whatever you do, my one advice would be pick something and then you need to shoot it for at least 3 months. Don't switch back and forth. Whatever you're going to shoot, pick it and shoot it for at least 3 months. Dedicate to that discipline and that discipline alone, that release. Because if you're switching back and forth between several things until you've shot, like I switch back and forth, but I've shot those disciplines for years. I've got them down. To switch back and forth for me is no big deal. But if you're learning a new discipline and you're switching back and forth, you're never going to get it down. You're never going to get used to it. You're going to develop bad habits. You're going to hate it, fight it, whatever. Get it down, learn it, and then make up your mind whether that's one you're going to shoot.
So how does somebody even know? What are you looking for when you, first off, let me take one step back. If somebody's just starting, especially if they have any kind of background with a gun, then I'm going to start with a hinge with an index because that's normal for them. You know, they're used to feeling that trigger in the index finger. So that's what I'm going to start them with. But do you have any kind of direction to go as far as like, okay, if you pick up a release and it just, what are you looking for to know? Oh, that's a good release. Or that's garbage. Like as far as the way it functions, the way it works, how smooth it is, how quiet it is. What are you looking for to know that's a good release?
Just what feels good to you. I mean, that would be the thing. I mean, pick them up. They make a lot of testers out there, firing lines or whatever. Shoot a little bit, you know, of those, kind of put them in your hand and pull the trigger and play with them. Find one that you think feels good in your hand. Feels good in the way the trigger mechanism works, smooth, and then shoot it for a while and then decide if you like that and that's what you're going to stick with. Then if you want to try something else, try it. But that would be my big suggestion. Usually with a new shooter, most often or not, it's somebody you see, they're going to pick the cheapest thing usually because they're getting started and they're not looking to spend a lot of money. So they usually find the cheapest thing they can find and then go from there.
That's another topic of discussion because in my opinion, you can get higher quality index finger releases at a budget price over a hinge. You know, a hinge, they start off more expensive. And so for the person just starting out, you know, it's really easy to swallow to say, hey, we can get you a really good release for $100. You know, we can get you a release that's going to perform really, really well for $100 rather than, Okay, if you want to go with a hinge, then we have to drop 220 to get a decent one, you know?
Yep.
And so that's another topic of discussion. But I did see a post, and it really made me think, you know, we both have a love for Hotshot. And really, that didn't come down to price point. That came down to I picked up a Tempest years ago, and I loved the way it shot. I just loved that release. It was super smooth. The trigger was crisp. It was clean. I loved the way it broke. I just loved that release. But, and it really wasn't until yesterday I saw a post about somebody. Well, it was Mike's Archery, and they were talking about Hotshot, and they were just talking about how good that release is for the price that you get them at. And so that's right. What I would encourage people to do is, like, you know, a release isn't something that you have to go to the extreme on budget to get a good release. You can get really good releases. You know, Hotshot, every release from Hotshot is a great release. Trophy Ridge makes good releases without breaking the bank. There are good Absolutely. Releases out there that you can buy without having to spend a bunch of money on. And every release I've ever shot from Hotshot performs really well. Every release I've ever shot from Trophy Ridge performs really well. I personally shoot a Hotshot. I don't shoot a Trophy Ridge, but they just perform really well, and you don't have to break the bank. So I would encourage you. Releases are really one of those things. You know, people talk about go to a bow shop and try out the bows and figure out what works for you. Releases are the same deal. Like, you can't just pick a release off the internet and say, that's the one I want. Even reviews aren't going to help you out a lot, because there are some releases out there that are highly reviewed.
Your hand.
Exactly. You got to feel them. You got to try them. You got to see if it fits your hand well. You got to see if you like the way it breaks at the shot. You have to feel those releases. So I would just encourage you, go to a shop. Go to a shop that sells a lot of releases. You know, they have the trigger releases that you can just try on a little rope, and you don't have to shoot bows. And you can just feel that release. You can see how they feel in your hand, how they fit in your hand. You know, there's been releases out there that are highly, you know, reviewed really good, and I get it, and then it just doesn't. If I'm shooting an index, I like it really short, because I like to really wrap my finger around that. And then you get the release, and you're like, man, I love the way the trigger is, but I can't get it short enough for me. I can't get it to fit well for me. So go to a shop, try out all the different releases, figure out what feels best in your hand, and shoot that.
We talked about, even you and I the other night, about the thumb buttons. And we talked about how you not feeling comfortable with it in your hand and not having anything around your wrist versus me being so relaxed. And I sent you the video of me, and I barely got my fingers on it, and my hand's just almost falling asleep back here. And you're like, yeah, I can't do that. I'd throw it or whatever. And I'm like, no, my hand's just barely on a tonk, and it just, you know, I don't even hardly have a hold of it. And
that's, you know, one thing, you know, if you're making the switch from a index finger to a thumb, you know, several companies make it, but Hotshot has the release that, you know, you still strap to your wrist. So you can have that security, and like, all the weight's on my wrist, and then I'm just holding the release real lightly in my fingers.
Right.
But all of the actual weight is on my wrist, just like an index release. So you can have that. So you can feel that. And then, you know, I've done that before too, where I've worked with a release like that to where all the weight is in what Lewis is referring to there is, I will just death grip a handheld. Like, I'll just wrap it and hold it really tight just because it's
just bad.
It's bad. That is bad. You want to have a release, a loose grip on that. Yeah. But use one of those that have a strap on the wrist. That way you can really, you know, just hold the weight of the bow with your wrist strap, and then rest that release in your fingers. Get used to that, and then cut the strap off and use the release without a strap on it. I don't ever mind having a wrist strap on, though. You don't like stuff around your wrist. I like stuff around my wrist. I like my release right there. That way it's always there. You know, I don't have to worry about, oh man, I dropped it, or oh man, it fell off, or whatever. It's on my wrist. To each his own.
Yep. I'm a hands-free kind of person. I like having my hands free and being able to, you know, my release is hanging there on my bow, but I can get my hands in my, I don't like having gloves on. So I like having my hands free and able to put them in my pockets where I can keep them warm. And then I'm I know where my release is. That animal's coming. I can keep my eye on the animal, get my hand on the bow. I never have to look at my bow or my release. I know exactly where it's at, hands on, but I can watch that animal the entire time. If that animal looks in my general direction, I stop, but I'm not having to look down to get hooked onto my D loop or anything like that. I'm always eyes on the animal, and I like that ability. And so that's why I like shooting that way.
Funny story about the Tempest. Right when I bought it, I was a young married guy right out of college, so $100 was a lot of money. And you know, I remember telling my wife, like, I'm really sorry, but I need to buy this. I need a new release, and I'm gonna spend the money. And I still don't like to spend money, but you know, I was just like, you know, I'm sorry, but we won't have dessert for the next couple nights and pay for it, whatever. And so I buy that release, and the first time I ever took it hunting, I hooked it on my D-loop, and I went out to the woods. And I get to my tree, and the release is gone. And I was like, first thought that went through my head was, crap, that was $100. Second thought that went through my head was, crap, Chris is going to kill me. Third thought that went through my head was, how do I shoot a deer if it comes in? Like, I don't have a release at all. And so I had just walked in like a mile through a bean field, and I'm like, there's never going to find this release. And so I climb out of my tree. Good thing I got there early enough. So I climb out of my tree, and I just start walking the path that I thought I walked, you know, going through a bean field. I was hoping I was on the right trail, and I went like 110 yards in the bean field, and it was laying right there. I'm like, what are the chances of that? And so I get the release, run back to the tree and hunt. But like, it was a lucky find, man. I was just like, I was blown away that I found it, much less that close. You know, it could have been a mile away right out of the truck. But it happened to be 100 yards in the bean field, and I happened to just walk on it. So lucky find. So
I've always got two, one in my pocket and one in my bag. So if once I hook one on the bow, when I get in the tree stand or whatever, one in my pocket, like when I'm walking in, if I could shoot when I'm going in, it's in my pocket so I can get it out on the bow real quick if I need to. The other one's in the backpack for a backup. But I always have two with me when I'm hunting. And then, I just in case, and then, but I'm never anywhere without at least two of them. And then, the other is that, you would be surprised how many times I've had to go back with a metal detector looking for a release that, I've got an old trusty one that is actually, has been retired at this point, but I have more than once have had to go find that sucker with a metal detector because dear Lord, I'm not losing that release. That's my baby. It probably almost means as much to me as my firstborn child. And I'm back on my hands and knees digging in the grass, looking for it in a pasture because I got to have that release. And yeah, but I get
it. See, I've got tabs like that. Like I don't know why, but because tabs aren't expensive. You can get a Bateman for like, you know, $25. Yep. But once it's broken in, like just to that just sweet spot of just like, oh, it's the best tab ever. Like, I'll do anything to not lose that tab. And like, I remember one time, like, I go out to grab my bow and the tab was gone. And I was like, where the heck is my tab? And so I'm like freaking out. I'm like, where is that tab? And my wife was like, there's four on the wall right there. And I'm like, yeah, but those aren't my tab. Like, I need that tab. And I find it like my son had been playing with it. I'm like, dude, I don't know if you understand this. Like, I'll choose that tab over you. Like, when it comes down to it, bro, that tab, like, you don't mess with that tab. But it's funny, man. We just get, you know, and it goes back to just like, having that equipment that you are confident in, that you know, man, that tab, dude, it's broken in right how I like it. That release, man, there's just something about that release, man. It works every time. I know the ins and outs of it. I know what it likes, what it doesn't like. Man, there's just something about that, dude, and there's no substitute for that.
Oh, yeah. We had this farm that we hunted when I was a kid. We actually had a tree stand that was kind of that way, that no matter what kind of season we were having, good, bad, indifferent, we kind of called it the trophy stand. It was just that stand. I actually killed my first Pope and Young buck, my second Pope and Young buck out of that stand, both with my bow. No matter what kind of year you were having, you went to that stand, you were killing a buck and a big one. And for us here where I live, that means I'm talking at least 140 inch or bigger, mature whitetail. And so you're going to that stand, that's what's happening. And but when we lost that property, it was almost like crying, taking that stand down because we couldn't hunt that property anymore. And you're like crying tears and, oh, I can never hunt this again. And yeah, because, you know, you're just like, what do I do now? But yeah, I get it.
That's the old killing tree is what they call that.
That's exactly what it was. I can remember, I'll never forget that hunt, man, being in that, sitting in that tree. And I remember it was foggy morning. Like it was just that perfect frost, that first frost, and it was dewy and the fog was just coming off and you couldn't see more than about 20 yards. You could shoot that far, but that was all you could see. And I could hear him grunting just brr, as he was walking. And you're like, Oh yeah. And you could just tell it was mature. And I'm like, and it was one of those things where like I had shot deer, but not anything like that. But I knew it was a mature buck and you're like, oh, and you're shaking and you know it's coming. And then all of a sudden out of the fog comes the rack and that's all you could see. And you're like, oh, and then there he is. And you shoot and the arrow goes and then he jumps and he runs up and he stands on the creek at just a little different angle. And you could see the way the arrow's in him. And you're like, oh no, that doesn't look right. And then you're scared because you're like, oh, I shot back and it doesn't look right. Oh no. And it's wrong. And this is all gone horrible. You know, I can remember getting out of the tree and calling my dad. He was at work and calling him and freaking out going, you know, I shot and it's back and it's horrible. It's all gone wrong. And I'm, you know, panicking. And he's like, I'm leaving work. I'm coming. And, you know, then come to find out, you know, that I made the perfect shot. It was the right angle, you know, for the angle he was standing when I shot, it was great. It was right behind the ribs at a really hard quartered away angle. The arrow went right up behind the ribs, went right up, clipped the right lung, clipped the heart, clipped the left lung, and then buried just forward of the left shoulder and stopped. And the fletching was sticking out just behind his rib cage. But when he squared up to me, when he stopped after he'd run a little ways after he'd shot, it, you know, then he squared to me. Well, then the arrow looked like it was way back. And, you know, then I'm freaking out. And heck, he didn't go 40 yards from where I shot him and he was done. And so, you know, dad and I found him in no time flat. Man. Oh yeah. And dad's going, you know, dad finds him first and dad's like, you made the perfect shot. Way to go. He's all happy and proud and, you know, it works out great, but yeah, I'll never forget that place. And, you know, it was awesome. Of course, then the other one was with my brother. And of course he's gone now. So that makes that memory even better. I was the very next year and I'd had a horrible year, hadn't seen nothing. And I'm going to that stand. I got to change my luck. So I go down to that stand, get in, and I'd done some doe bleating, estrus bleats with the can. And here comes this buck out of the pasture, out of nowhere, following the creek. And he turns and he comes around. I can't get him to stop. And so I try to lead him a little bit and I didn't lead him enough, shot. And that one I did hit back and I knew it. And of course they always went down the hill into the creek. Well, this one goes up the hill and I'm like, perfect. He went up, he goes up and he lays down and I'm watching him at the top of the hill and he's bedded. Of course, cell phones were at least a thing by this point. And I'm texting my brother and he's in a stand on the other side of the hill. And I'm like, hey, I just arrowed one, but it's, you know, gut shot, it's back, but he's laid down top of the hill. He's like, I'm coming. I'm like, no, don't come. Like you come over the hill, he's going to get up. Like, let him lay down. Well, he's like, oh, wait a minute. Well, his wait a minute was like 10 minutes. and how the tree stand he gets. And here he comes, and I can see him coming over the hill. I'm like, oh man, stop. And he comes over the hill. And of course, at this point, my brother hadn't shot anything that big. And this buck stands up and he's like 160 inch deer, 9 point with big, tall tines on one side, just way overside the other side. He stands up when he comes over the hill, he spooks him and he stands up and I see my brother's eyes get huge. And he's like, oh, and he draws his bow. Of course, the deer's between me and him. And I'm like, don't shoot, because the arrow is going to come my direction. And he doesn't shoot. The deer takes off. And of course, now he goes down the hill towards me, runs underneath of me and jumps the fence onto the neighbor. And I'm like, oh, we're going to lose this deer now, because he got up. And if he just left him alone, he'd have laid there. We end up finding him and it all worked out. But I can just remember my brother coming down the hill and going with his arms outstretched over his head, you know, this is the biggest deer I've ever seen. Oh my Lord. You know, and I'm like, oh yeah, and now we're not going to find it, but it worked out. We found it. We got him drug out. And of course,
I was really hoping you were going to tell me that your brother shot it. And then it becomes the argument of like, no, dude, you wounded the deer. I killed the deer. No. This is my deer, dude.
There'd have been no argument. I'd have beat him senseless. It was my deer. My deer. No.
That's awesome, man. Well, Lewis, I appreciate you coming on, man. Guys, where can they find Dominus Strands at? How do they get a hold of you? How do they get in touch with you?
Obviously on Facebook, Instagram, Dominant Strands. The website is dominant-strands.com. You can always call the shop. Phone number is on the website. It's on Facebook, but it's you can always holler in here. And I'm glad to talk to anybody, answer questions. Even if you're not buying a strain, man, holler. I'll gladly talk you through whatever and help you out. We'll gladly do what we can to help walk you through whatever issue you got. So,
guys, the best bowstrings you can buy. I am thoroughly impressed with all the strings I have from him. I just commissioned him to build me a set of strings for the Prince, which is my Persist. It's Fresh Prince of Bel-Air themed, so it's got super flashy strings, all different neon colors. I'm doing the arrow build for that right now. Actually, I landed on a rupture from Deer Crossing Archery with 100 grains in the outsert and 100 grains in the broadhead for 510 total. Now I got to fletch them up all flashy to match the string. So I am incredibly impressed with Dominant Strands. But guys, if you are in need of new strings after the season, I would highly, highly encourage you to check out Lewis and the crew at Dominant Strands, because they will build you a phenomenal set of strings. Guys, I know, cheap interchangeable blade knives. They're all in the rage. Change your blade right there and you can keep going. And it's cool. And I have one in my bag and I like to keep one in my bag. However, there is no replacement for a well-built, hand-forged knife. Something that I know is dependable. It's strong. If I pick it up, it's going to be sharp. It's going to be ready to go. These right here are knives built by my good friend Nick Deeker, Nick's Knife Works. And the most beautiful part of this is it's not cut and dry. You don't just pick out a knife and say, well, I guess that's the one I need. No. He built this one specifically to the length that I wanted it. I wanted this to fit right on the side of my binocular harness, so it was always there, always ready for me to grab. He built this one to fit really small in my pocket for an everyday carry. Guys, a good hand-forged knife is worth its weight in gold. Go check out Nick Deeker at nicksknifeworks.com. Guys, thank you for listening. Y'all have a fantastic week.